Boston's Mayor James M. Curley today filed a petition with the Justice Department asking for a presidential pardon. He's now serving a jail sentence for mail fraud. Rome. Eva Perón, wife of the Argentine president, had a 27-minute private audience with Pope Pius XII. Tokyo. General MacArthur says that Okinawa, the other islands of the Ryukyus, and the Bonins must be given to the United States by Japan to become America's strategic frontier against aggression. London. The Food Ministry has increased the British sugar rations from 8 to 10 ounces a week, effective July 25th. Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The official Ethiopian Herald criticizes the Marshall Relief Plan for Europe because Africa is completely left out of the picture. Oakland, California. Striking AFL transit workers have voted to end their 17-day strike against the key system transit lines. Berlin. Russia has vetoed the nomination of Ernest Reuter as the new mayor of Berlin. It is believed the Russians opposed him because he has renounced a belief in communism. Mount McKinley, Alaska. Three young veterans of mountain warfare who tried to climb Mount McKinley and got lost for 14 days are now recovering in a hospital. At an altitude of 16,000 feet, they suffered from headaches and loss of speech. Chicago. Prices on many foods and some household items have risen sharply since the end of price controls a year ago. A survey shows that meat has gone up as much as 50% in some areas, but clothing prices have remained steady. Hartford, Connecticut. Maurice S. Sherman, the editor and publisher of the Hartford Courant, was stricken fatally with a heart attack today at a downtown club. Washington. The Interstate Commerce Commission today authorized the railroads to increase transcontinental rates on some commodities by approximately 5%. Water carriers may increase their rates 6.5%. Sonoma, California. The wartime air chief, General H.H. Arnold, suggests that the recent C-54 air crashes were due to personnel failures rather than faulty planes. Lake Success, America's delegate to the U.N., Warren Austin, used the toughest language yet in laying down the law to the Balkans. He told the Security Council that it would be called upon to use force if necessary to stop anti-Greek activities of the Balkan satellites. And that's the bulletin news. Now for some of the interesting details. This is Les Griffith in New York, ready to introduce ABC Newsmen with on-the-scene reports. The danger center of the continuing Midwest floods tonight is St. Louis. The Mississippi, its own rampaging torrents reinforced by the Missouri just north of St. Louis, is spilling into the city with the worst yet to come. ABC correspondent Joe Brennan has an eyewitness report of the situation, brings it to us now through station KXOK, American affiliate in St. Louis.
It is impossible in a broadcast to tell you the terrible story of the flood condition here or the anxiety which fills the hearts of those whose homes have been washed away or whose property is threatened by the ever-growing wall of onrushing water. Lashed by additional heavy rains last night, the Mississippi and Missouri rivers swelled still higher in the St. Louis area today. The Coast Guard estimates at least 4,000 are homeless in the city itself, with at least 1,000 homes flooded and 19,000 acres underwater. The city waterworks here are sandbagging in an effort to keep the flood from disrupting the water supply. The railroad tracks along the river are underwater, and many manufacturers are threatened by the rising tide. Police have set up barricades and are patrolling to prevent looting in stricken areas. Despite the valiant efforts of flood fighters, the Harrisonville Ivy Levee, 30 miles south of here, gave way to the pounding Mississippi. Flood waters swirled over another 30,000 acres as Coast Guardsmen and the Navy fought to rescue marooned families and livestock. Every available man is being recruited in threatened areas to sandbag the levees. 600 soldiers from Scottsfield, Illinois, were dispatched to the Degonia Fountain Bluff levee south of St. Louis to join the 400-man civilian force already battling the river in an effort to save 29,000 acres of fertile land. Additional troops have arrived from Fort Sheridan. Still more at the Granite City, Illinois Engineer Depot to reinforce those already at work on the levee there. Radio stations have been broadcasting appeals for volunteers to work on Shota Levee, north of this city on the Illinois side. North of here, the rampaging Missouri River has broken through at another levee, flooding an additional 4,000 acres in the St. Charles area. It stands at 34.2 at St. Charles and is expected to crest at 35 feet. The Mississippi is expected to crest here Sunday at 39 feet. That's 9 feet above flood stage. The levees now standing are expected to hold if no more heavy rains occur. This is Joe Brennan, reporting from St. Louis.
Despite official silence, there were some indications late tonight in Paris what the big three foreign ministers had discussed. ABC correspondent Robert Sturdivant has gathered a pretty complete account of what went on, brings it to us now in a transcribed report from Paris.
The Russian, French, and British foreign ministers went to work this afternoon in a sweltering 100-degree heat wave, the worst Paris has experienced this year. Newsmen were barred from the conference room, the ornate parrot chamber on the second floor of the French Foreign Ministry, and the word was passed along that the talks would be held in secrecy, at least for the present, and possibly until the end of the conference. The best guess is that, given favorable conditions, the three-power conference on Secretary of State Marshall's plan for American aid to Europe will wind up in 4 days to a week. My informants tell me that during today's four-hour conference, Georges Bidault, the French foreign minister, began by exposing the French idea that special committees of experts should be set up to establish the needs of Europe in the matters of power, transport, food, and steel production. Afterwards, it was thought that Bevin, who brought a 30-man delegation with him, supported Bidault, but also suggested that the work of these special committees be linked with the United Nations European Economic Commission, which has its headquarters in Geneva. What Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov said is uncertain, but it's generally agreed that he asked a lot of questions. For one thing, he probably wanted to know what, if any, agreements had been reached between Bevin and Bidault before they invited the Russians to participate in this conference. It was also thought he wanted to know something of the conversations Bevin has had in the last few days with Will Clayton, Under Secretary of State, now in London, on his way to the Geneva European Economic Conference. This is Robert Sturdivant reporting from Paris.
Congress acted today to extend governmental authority over the controversial subject of exporting oil and gasoline at a time when the armed forces say they are facing a shortage. ABC correspondent Jack Bell has a full report on the late developments.
Rumblings of dissatisfaction over the way oil is being shipped out of the United States right when we face an oil shortage here at home began to build up today into a roar. The acting Secretary of the Navy, John L. Sullivan, disclosed that there is a critical shortage of oil for the Navy, that it will be forced to buy 500,000 barrels of oil a month for the next 6 months in order to build up a safe reserve. The oil will come from the Persian Gulf area and be transported halfway around the world. Navy Captain Ralph Wilson told a House committee that the fleet might be largely immobilized in case of war if oil imports could not be obtained. Chairman Alvin Weichel of the House Merchant Marine Committee introduced a bill to clamp down on oil exports to foreign countries. It would be a mandatory affair. The congressman pointed out that President Truman already had the power, if he wanted to exercise it, to cut off oil shipments abroad. But he said the administration had permitted shipments of about 191 million barrels of petroleum products since January 1946. 600,000 barrels have gone to Russia only this past fortnight. Tankers, which this country lend-leased to Russia, have started to carry away 850,000 barrels of oil and gasoline. The Weichel bill would forbid any exports until the Navy, the Army, and the Department of Commerce had certified that all U.S. needs were filled. Senator Brewster of Maine has introduced a resolution to investigate the entire oil shortage situation, including the Navy's proposed purchase of Arabian oil. Senator Brewster is angry over the price of $1.05 a barrel for oil, which the Navy could have bought 6 years ago at 40 cents a barrel. When we moved into Greece and Turkey under the Truman Doctrine, he said, we did it partly to guarantee Arabian oil reserves. If we are the guys who guarantee the oil, we're entitled to better treatment. And today, the Senate voted to continue export controls until July 15th. Otherwise, they would expire on June 30th. This is Jack Bell reporting from Washington.
The civil war in Paraguay drags on, and so does the war of words on that subject in Buenos Aires. ABC correspondent Herbert M. Clark brings us the up-to-date situation and a transcribed report from the Argentine capital.
Paraguay's civil war is not producing much military news today. It is still the same bitter stalemate. But it is giving hemisphere diplomats new headaches. You'll recall that Brazilian sources recently charged the Perón regime here with sending arms to the dictatorial Moreno government in Paraguay. Well, those charges were promptly denied by Argentina, and Secretary of State Marshall said that he believed the denials. Well, the opposition benches in Congress have raised the matter again here, and Peronistas answered that that certainly Argentina is sending arms, material purchased before the Civil War started. Well, that threw the situation into the open again, and it was made worse when one deputy reported on documentary evidence that Argentina was even testing new weapons in Paraguay, including a grenade which battlefront evidence shows, and I quote from the congressional debate, has the explosive force of a 75-millimeter shell. That makes it a pretty good grenade. The congressman also quoted one Paraguayan officer as saying that Argentina seemed more interested in killing Paraguayans than in settling the conflict. The settlement, of course, is the diplomatic headache, because it's going to be pretty hard to patch up hemisphere unity along defensive lines, as the coming Rio de Janeiro conference hopes to do, with some of the peace-loving democracies neither as democratic nor as fond of peace as they might be.
Now this is Les Griffith again with the headline summary, the news of tomorrow. Raging Mississippi flooding St. Louis. Mine vacations start tonight, paralyzing coal industry. Foreign ministers confer in Paris. Congress gets bill to clamp down on oil to Russia. Shipyard strike threatens to spread. Bugsy Siegel reported link to Mexican dope ring. Chandler treason trial to end tomorrow. CIO rejects general strike against labor bill. Those are the headlines, and that's the news of tomorrow. And now your local announcer with the weather forecast of tomorrow. Partly cloudy and continued warm and humid with scattered thunderstorms at night. The highest temperature in the upper 80s. The present Midtown Manhattan temperature 74 degrees, humidity 74%, wind velocity 16 miles per hour from the south. Barometer 29.91 inches, rising. Listen again tomorrow and every night at the same time to your American Broadcasting Company station for news of tomorrow. Les Griffith reporting. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.